Welcome to Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program today James Lee Burke. He has a new novel out called Feast Day of Fools. Welcome back, Jim.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show again. We've been doing this a long time.
You know, Jim, I looked back through my calendars the other day, and I counted up the number of times we've talked, and you are my most interviewed author. I've interviewed you more than anybody.
Well, I appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad, because you're also one of my favorite writers, and this new book, you decided to bring back Hackberry Holland, and I'm so glad you did.
Well, thanks. I believe it's my best book.
You know, I say that about every book you put out, and you keep doing that to me, Jim. I agree.
Well,
I think
thanks.
It is.
It is. It is my best book. There's no question about it.
There's only one problem with it, Jim. When I finished, I was wishing it was twice as long.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much.
For listeners and readers who aren't familiar with his character, this is the third book that you've had him in. And the very first book you wrote a long time ago, it was called Lay Down My Sword and Shield. It was reissued last year in paperback.
Yeah.
And then you wrote a book called Rain Gods.
Mm-hmm.
And Rain Gods, I don't think it's essential that readers would start with that one and then read this one first, but there's definitely some shadows of that book in this one.
Yeah, but they are written to be read independently of each other.
Uh-huh.
Or the three books don't have to be read as one entity.
Tell us about Hackberry Holland.
Well, I've been writing about him a long time. I wrote a number of short stories about him. I based a lot of my earlier fiction and then later fiction as well on my stories that came out of my mother's family. I didn't change the names.
You didn't change the names?
No, the patriarch of the family was a drover, and he was a gunfighter and a Baptist preacher and an alcoholic by the name of Sam Morgan Holland. He was pretty well known in his day for, you know, he was a violent man. He eventually became a minister, but we meet him and, you know, his descendants in a number of novels. And Hackberry is a descendant of Sam Morgan Holland. Billy Bob Holland is Hackberry's first cousin, and he's a former Texas Ranger. We meet him in Cimarron Rose and Bitterroot and In the Moon of Red Ponies. They're a very interesting family, and Hackberry, I believe, is one of the best characters I've written about, certainly.
Cimarron Rose, that Billy Bob Holland, that was the first book that I interviewed you about. What was that, mid-90s?
1997, it was.
Yeah.
That's right. And that won the Edgar for that year, and I think it's one of my two or three best books, really. It never had the commercial success of some of the others, and I've never understood why. It's never made any sense to me, but...
Well, it's like White Doves at Morning. That's another one of my favorites of yours, and it's a standalone.
Yeah.
And I think that people who love your stuff need to go back and dig that book up.
It's one of my best. It's about the Civil War and the Battle of Shiloh. I used biographical characters. Nathan Bedford Forrest is in it. Some old Colonel Mouton, who was a famous Louisiana cavalry officer who was killed during the war, and my ancestors, and the White League. They were terrorists, worse than the Klan or worse than the Knights of the White Camellia. But it's quite a book, I think, but it, like Cimarron Rose, never received that much attention. I don't know if that's well put. It just did not enjoy the success of some of the Dave Robichaux books.
Well, here's the secret, probably. You stop touring, and as soon as you stop going on book tours, then the books just started selling like crazy. Isn't that how it works?
That's how exactly how it works. It's really humbling. It's like a message. Stay home, and we will read your book, but just make sure you stay out of town. I've always said that I didn't have to seek humility. It's always found me. But that's a fact. We quit touring. We did it for 15 years, and we were doing 35 cities a year. We quit in 2005, and my book sales doubled, and they've been doing the same thing ever since.
That's, well, James Lee Burke joins us. His new novel is Feast Day of Fools. Hackberry Holland. He's a Korean War veteran, and he's a sheriff of a county along the Mexican border in Texas.
That's right. He's a survivor of the Chosin Reservoir and was in a prisoner of war camp in North Korea for 3 years. And he brought many bad memories back from that experience. And he's a remarkable fellow. He's just a great character, I think. And he finds himself here in Feast Day of Fools, down on the border, dealing with the most intriguing villain I've written about, Preacher Jack Collins. San Antonio Express just wrote an early review of the book and said, this is a great compliment. I think the quote is, Preacher Jack Collins is the most iniquitous villain in American contemporary fiction. But he's a religious fanatic and a mass killer. But he's an extraordinary guy, and he's the nemesis of Hackberry. And Hackberry's trying to, he plans to cool him out. This is a genuinely evil man. But Jack Collins is an emblematic character. Both the novel Rain Gods and Feast Day of Fools deal with the hijacking of Christianity. And they both deal with the consequences of neocolonialism in the post-war, post-World War II era. That's what the books are really about. And Dave Robichaux says in one of the Louisiana novels, wars of enormous consequence are always fought in places no one cares about. We choose disposable areas. In this instance, the place is the American Southwest. They're out there in this great bowl of a desert filled with people who are morally insane. And the story is allegorical, in other words, but that's at least its intention.
You've got Preacher Jack Collins, who is this misguided messenger from God, or so he believes.
Yeah.
And he's really a damaged guy. In fact, this book is littered with damaged characters. You've got Hackberry, he's damaged. You've got Krill. You've got all kinds of villains in here. This Negrito, I think he's a great villain too.
Oh, he's a great character. Yeah, he's one of the Mexican gangsters we meet, this very primitive and violent man, but he's a really interesting guy, I think. You got it. And these guys are survivors of the wars in Central America, and they have found their way into a new enterprise here on the Tex-Mex border. You see, that border today, the American-Mexican border, is the most violent place in the world. There's no place in the Middle East that comes close to it.
You've also got sort of a mystical character who's also very damaged, but he's a sympathetic character, and that's Danny Boy Lorca.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah, he's an Indian fighter, he's a former boxer and former convict, fellow who used to be a club fighter. And he'd fight in tank towns in the Southwest, and locals could beat up on him, break their fist on his face for $100, and that was the way he made his living. But he's messianic, and he has holy visions. He's actually an Indian shaman. And he's one of, I think, the most compelling characters in the book. He's a man of faith, and he sees the past and the future and the present as one entity. And And my father subscribed to that belief. My father was a kind of amateur historian, but he believed time was not sequential, that instead of it happening in chronological fashion, events all transpire at once, as though inside the mind of God.
You described some of these people in this area as insane. I think your character Krill certainly fits that description.
Yeah, he is. Krill is soaked in blood, and his three children, were killed by a U.S. Army helicopter down in either Nicaragua or El Salvador. We're not sure. He doesn't tell us where it happened. But he bears great enmity towards the United States. But Krill becomes an unlikely messiah. And actually, the story is based on the Passion Play. That's the real story. But if a reader will take that from the story or not, but again, that was my intention.
Well, that's good to have that insight, because I think a lot of readers will figure that out. Just like your Robichaud novels are inspired by, in a way, Sancho Panza and you know who.
You got it. That's right.
Okay.
I'm going to have to send Cervantes a royalty check one of these days.
Okay. For those of us who have followed you over the years, we pick up these things perhaps very slowly, but it's always helpful to have your assistance and say, yeah, Passion Play, okay? Passion Play. Feast Day of Fools is the book. And James Lee Burke wrote it. It's just being published by Simon & Schuster. And we have these shadows. There's the shadow of Hackberry's imprisonment in the Korean War. And there's also the shadow of his dead wife. And he has a deputy who... There's tremendous romantic tension between him and Pam Tibbs. This is another underlying theme.
Yeah, he was married to a labor organizer, a Hispanic woman, and we learn of their romance and their marriage in the novel Lay Down My Sword and Shield. And Hackberry, when we first meet him in that novel, is an embittered alcoholic, a man filled with rage because of the experience he had in the Korean War, a cynic, ultimately. And his wife changes his life. She was a friend of Cesar Chavez, an organizer for the United Farm Workers, but she died about 12 years back from ovarian cancer. And Hackberry has a chief deputy now, a woman named Pam Tibbs, who is much younger than he is, and it is she who's enamored with him. And, of course, he's drawn to her, but he has the problem of being a much older man, and he feels a sense of ethical restraint. He feels that he will be operating in a... unfair. He would with an unfair advantage as her supervisor if he enters into a relationship, a romantic relationship with her.
And he's always fighting his demons and remembering what he did, the terrible things he did going across the border.
He has an enormous amount of guilt from his younger life. He was profligate in his first marriage. He was married to a really terrible woman early on in his political career. He was running for Congress back in the 60s, and he was wealthy and handsome. He was a recipient of the Navy Cross, a war hero. But in these drunken blackouts, he would cross the border into the brothel districts, you know, of northern Mexico. And he realizes that his sin was not as much one of sexual excess is the fact that he exploited the bodies of poor third world women. And that haunts him for years, the fact that he was willing to take advantage of other people's poverty. He says something to the effect that their aphrodisiac across the border was hunger, and that he exploited it. He became a member of that class of men whom he actually despises, and he tries to expiate his guilt in this book.
James Lee Burke joins us. His new novel is Feast Day of Fools. It's a Hackberry Holland book, and in the book he encounters a woman who reminds him of his wife, and that is a woman named Anton Ling.
And
she has a very mysterious past. She was involved with Air America. And as I read the book, knowing a little bit about you, I know you don't do autobiography in these novels, but I had to think a lot of your own personal experience was coming through in some of this.
Well, probably not mine, but my wife's, certainly. My wife's Asian, and we meet Anton Ling, who is a former employee of Air America, which, of course, was a CIA front. And in the book, the Mexicans call her La Magdalena, you know, Mary Magdalene. And she has become a member of the, there's an underground, there was years ago, I knew people in it who hid political exiles from Central America. They smuggled people, you know, into the American Midwest. They protected them from the IRS because the death squads were after them. Mm. But Anton Ling saw some terrible things in Laos. She saw them in Cambodia. And she remembers what it was like to see, you know, large drums of gasoline mixed with Tide detergent ignited by grenades that were dropped, you know, with the cans into third world villages. But she lived inside the Golden Triangle. And you see, that's a story that many Americans don't know about, the association between the narcotics trade, third world warlords, the Chinese communists, the North Vietnamese, the Pathet Lao. We were heavily involved in Southeast Asia for a long time. We're not anymore because we paid a terrible price for that involvement. But my wife flew with Civil Air Transport for 2 years. Civil Air Transport became Air America.
Mm.
Yeah, my wife was in two wars, you know, really, I'm up close and personal. Bad stuff, as bad as it gets.
Mm. And Hackberry, he also encounters another kind of religious nut, and this is another very damaged individual. His name is Cody Daniels.
Yeah.
This book is replete with these kinds of people.
Yeah, he's another man, you know, hauling his cross up Golgotha. But he was involved in the bombing of an abortion clinic in Maryland. And he can't get it out of his head because he saw what his bomb did. He saw the aftermath, what he did to a nurse, you know, through planting that bomb. And he's driven almost mad by it. But Cody comes to a redemption. He's a great character.
And then you have your wonderful villain, Jack Thompson. And there's a point in the book where he goes into a cave and he starts digging. And I said to myself, I know what he's going to dig up because I read Rain Gods. And I'm not going to say what it was, but by golly, I was just so delighted to see what he found after he dug that hole.
Yeah, Jack Potter he disappears for a year. After Rain Gods, it was thought that he died in a cavern, but Jack lived, and he did penance for a year. I mean, he's a religious fanatic, and he, as he said, he covered himself with ashes and sackcloth. He ate out of garbage dumps. You know, he wandered the desert, and he believes that somehow he's done an adequate expiation of his sins. But Jack's a compulsive killer, and he has convinced himself that he is a figure in the Old Testament and that he's enamored with the great women of the Old Testament. Esther, for example, you know, was the mistress of Xerxes and saved the Hebrews when she said, "You will have to walk in my blood before you hurt my people." But the other great women, like, you know, Rebecca at the well. And so he identifies with these women. He believes these are the women that history meant for him to have as his companions. Well, this guy, you know, is everything that's loathsome in the eyes of any normal woman.
Yeah.
And here he is. He hasn't taken a shower since 1945, wandering the desert with a Thompson machine gun, thinking that all these beautiful women, and he encounters them with some regularity, and that they're going to really enjoy being with Jack Potter.
Yeah.
But he's a great character, but Jack, unlike most psychopaths, is bothered by what he's done.
Uh-huh.
He hears voices underneath the flowers in the desert. When the wind blows through the flowers, he hears voices under the ground. And he knows who belongs to those voices. It's the women he killed. He killed a bunch of Thai women who were being smuggled in to the country.
And they keep reminding him of that throughout the book, and he doesn't like that too much. The book is Feast Day of Fools. James Lee Burke wrote it. He joins us today on the program. I guess the thread that we haven't mentioned that kind of ties us all together is there's a lot of different people looking for one particular guy who's trying to hide out. Do we want to tell your listeners and readers who this guy is?
Well, we meet a fellow from Alabama named Noe Barnum. And Noe, whose name, of course, comes out of the Old Testament, was an electronic technician who worked on the construction of drone missiles, Predator missiles. And he becomes the golden grail all these guys are trying to get their hands on. Some of them are going to sell him to Al-Qaeda. There's some intelligence people who just want to put him out of business completely before he compromises the program. But the story is highly mythic, but all the events are contemporary and are based, in fact, in one way or another, on the events that have happened.
Well, I just loved it, Jim, and I always enjoy our conversations about your work. And I'm wondering, is there another Robichaux out there? Because I could really use some more cleat.
Well, I'm working on a novel now that I think will make a lot of people happy. I hope it does.
Are you being mysterious?
Oh, no, I just...
You don't want to talk about it.
I never plan what I'm doing when I'm writing a book.
Uh-huh.
I wake up with two scenes a day, and I work all day, and I work all the time, really, and then after about 11 months, I usually have something that looks like a book. It has pages and things like that.
I like that.
It's kind of, I have the organization of, as Dave says, of Cleet Purcell, a junkyard falling down a staircase.
Well, I doubt if you pay much attention to it, but I know that someone is keeping you involved in what they call social media. I know you have a Facebook page and a lot of activity going on out there, but I'm guessing you probably just kind of ignore it.
No, I never knew what it was. I'm not, you know, very knowledgeable about internet considerations, but the company... The publisher set up a Facebook page for my work, and my daughter, Pamela, runs all. She works for me, actually. She does the publicity, and she and Simon and Schuster handle Facebook. But no, I read it every day. It's really nice. It's the people on it are so nice. They're just very nice people. If the great advantage of being a writer is that the world of books is filled with nice people, you just very seldom have a bad experience.
Well, I confess that I look at your page, too, and I always get a kick out of it. It tickles me when I'll see that they've put up a video of you talking about something or other.
Yeah, it's pretty nifty. The publisher did that. The publisher sent a film crew out here, some guys, and I thought did a really, in spite of the challenge in terms of subject matter, they did a great job. My horses are in it. We have some gated horses, and the horses just loved it. They stayed in the camera. They shoved their noses in the lens.
So you're still out in Montana then?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Do you still go back to Louisiana for the winter, or do you stay out there all year now?
Well, we lived in Louisiana 12 years. Last winter we stayed here, and we're not sure about this one.
Uh-huh.
But last winter we stayed here.
Now, how do you know so much about Texas?
I was born there, and my mother's family's from a little place called Yoakum. It's southeast of San Antonio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, it's always a pleasure having you on the program, and I always look forward to our conversations, and I can't say enough good things about this book. It's Feast Day of Fools. It's a Hackberry Holland book, and I would suggest to readers and listeners out there that after you read it, you go back and you check out the other books about Hackberry, because you'll figure out some of the significance of what happens in this book when you read Rain Gods. And, of course, Lay Down My Sword and Shield gives you a much younger version of Hackberry and answers a lot of those questions. And then, of course, we've got all those other books, Jim, that you know people are going to be pulling out, because how many books is it now?
30 novels and 2 collections of short stories published.
My guest has been James Lee Burke, and his new novel is Feast Day of Fools. And Jim, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, it's been great being on, Vic, and thank you again.
For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. Nobody writes like James Lee Burke. Here's an excerpt from Feast Day of Fools. Hackberry Holland had come to believe that age was a separate country you did not try to explain to younger people, primarily because they had already made up their minds about it, and any lessons you had learned from your life were not the kind many people were interested in hearing about. If age brought gifts, he didn't know what they were. It had brought him neither wisdom nor peace of mind. His level of desire was the same, the lust of his youth glowing hot among the ashes each morning he woke. He could say with a degree of satisfaction that he didn't suffer fools, and drove from his company anyone who tried to waste his time. But otherwise, his dreams and his waking day were defined by the same values and frame of reference that came with his birthright. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.